Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Gordon Chang, that's Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host. And we go to our guide on manufacturing and trade these last years, more than a decade now. But here we are in the arena. Alan Tonelson, who blogs at Reality Check. Alan, I read the CNBC headline. It is most promising and confusing at the same time. Bessent, that's the Secretary of the Treasury, understood generally as the adult in the room. Bessent says he expects, quote, de-escalation, end quote, in U.S.-China tariff fight in the, again, quote, very near future. Alan, what the heck does that mean? Good day to you.
Hi, John, and hi, Gordon. And I got to tell you, especially because there's no complete transcript, at least not one that I've seen, it's really difficult to know what to make of this and related news reports. It could very well mean that Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, feels that the Trump administration is close to some kind of a deal with the Chinese that would lower tariffs. It also might mean that he's signaling to what seemed to have been a pretty heavily Wall Street audience that the Trump administration might be ready in some respect to back down. That would, I think, be very bad news for the American economy. But even the possibility of a U.S.-China trade deal might be cause for concern if it's not the right kind of deal. There's been so much focus on lowering tariffs and on getting zero-for-zero tariff deals with various countries, including China, that it's been overlooked largely that the non-tariff barriers that countries like China have erected to stop or to slow down the flow of U.S. exports can be even more important. And with China in particular, because these non-tariff barriers are put into place by a very secretive bureaucracy, they're very difficult to identify to begin with. And the kind of monitoring and enforcement that would be needed to make sure that this Chinese promise is actually real is going to be even more difficult. And it's going to have to take place over a pretty long period of time because we don't simply want to take China's word that it started behaving well.
Gordon, you have a question for Alan.
Alan, from the partial transcripts that I've seen, Bessent talks about a rebalancing of the Chinese economy. In other words, an emphasis on consumption. But as we've seen in the last couple of years, consumption's role in the Chinese economy has been declining, not increasing. Bessent talks about that rebalancing. That seems to me to be unrealistic. Your comments?
I agree, Gordon. I think it's completely unrealistic for two main reasons. One, there's been talk about rebalancing the Chinese economy for more than one decade. It is too export heavy for the entire world economy's sake. But as we've also seen, and this is reason number two, Xi Jinping doesn't want that. He wants the Chinese economy to be manufacturing heavy and therefore export heavy. And he's said on numerous occasions that he doesn't want China in particular to become a consumption heavy economy because that would mean the Chinese have become fat and lazy. And in his view, that approach is not going to help continue China's economic development.
Alan, I took some notes this morning on a story at FT about what it means to be a manufacturer in China. And there are no unions, I understand, but the conditions and the persecution and the pay for the people traveling to those factories from the from the interior. I believe these are the migrants who come for work. Mm-hmm. The dormitories are, this is one testimony from one FT. The dormitories are unheated and without air conditioning, and they don't always have hot water. There's seven to a room. They work 14-hour shifts, and one young man said he worked the equivalent of $2 an hour. And the point of the piece was to say, you're not going to see that kind of manufacturing come home to America. All right, fine, that's an ironic point. However, that is beyond exploitative. That is brutality and cruelty to the people you've built your miracle upon. Nobody wants to reproduce that. Is that what Xi Jinping means about export only, to abuse the young people in that fashion for years?
Well, he certainly doesn't seem to mind treating China's workers that way. But it's also important to keep in mind that under Xi Jinping's reign, there's been tremendous progress in automating Chinese manufacturing. And in fact, there was just an outstanding article in this morning's New York Times on that very subject. China has made jaw-dropping progress in integrating robotics and artificial intelligence and various other technologies into factories all over the country, and not just for advanced manufacturing. It's also, again, according to this New York Times report, it's also been integrating these technologies into labor-intensive manufacturing as well, which means that that manufacturing will become less labor-intensive all the time. Now, on the one hand, that's going to greatly help China continue its dominance of global manufacturing. On the other hand, it could very well exacerbate what's already a major Chinese manufacturing jobs problem and a major Chinese economy unemployment problem. And the latter is a special worry for Xi Jinping, because that can threaten China's political stability and the Communist Party's rule.
Gordon, you have a question or comment?
So, Alan, we have the Tariff Act of 1930, which prohibits the importation into the United States of goods made with forced labor. The circumstances that John described almost seem like that is forced labor, though we do know that in many factories, they are concentration camp-like situations. And also with the Uyghurs, it is actually slave labor. Why aren't we doing more to enforce this in our country?
The main reason is that none of the very powerful and influential business interests that have had the whip hand over U.S. trade policy toward China in particular for so many decades has any interests in disrupting U.S.-China trade because of issues like this. In fact, these business groups have a very strong vested stake in maintaining the status quo. It's very it's very profitable for them. It helps in particular to keep costs low.
Alan, 30 seconds. What's your sense of things? The Trump White House is extremely unpredictable. Are they looking for a deal, and these last weeks will be a dream?
They're clearly looking for a deal, and the question is, how much backbone will they display? And that's very uncertain now, because they're under tremendous political pressure, not only from their Democratic opponents, but from a growing number of Republicans who are worried about what's going to happen with the U.S. economy if the maximum pressure tariff strategy continues.
Alan Tonelson, who blogs at Reality Check, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor.